This segment of the Financial Sense News Hour is brought to you by Nationwide Financial. For more information about Nationwide's products and services, please visit nationwide.com. That's nationwide.com. Neither Nationwide nor any of its affiliates is related to or affiliated with Jim Poplava of Poplava Securities, Incorporated.
This is the Financial Sense News Hour with the president of PFS Group, Jim Poplava. Since 1982, PFS Group has offered asset management and educational resources that have helped investors build, maintain, and preserve their wealth. Now, here's the Financial Sense News team, Jim Poplava and John Loeffler.
To our Lifetime Income series. Today, we're going to be talking about IRAs, individual retirement accounts. A lot of people have IRAs. Say, for example, baby boomers who put money in their 401k profit sharing plans, and then they retire. They roll over their money to an IRA. But isn't this something when you're always dealing with regulation? They may be unaware of the fact that depending on how you set up your estate, Uncle Sam or Governor Sam could take up to 80% of your IRA when you die if you have not planned properly. And you and Roberta Robinson mentioned that earlier this summer during a show. There is a way around part of this, and that's the subject today, how to leave more of your IRA to your family.
Currently right now, John, depending on how one structures the beneficiaries of your IRA, all of that money that is in that IRA could be subject to income taxes and estate taxes on the death of the final spouse. So even though, you know, most husband and wife leave each other as primary beneficiary, so the husband names his wife, and then usually it's named either in a trust or, if it's not done properly, it could be the children, but all of that income could be subject to taxes in the year of death. Now, right now, the income tax rate is 35%, and the estate tax rate is 35%. So if you're in a high enough bracket, now this year, it's basically $5,120,000, but we know that changes next year, and it goes down to $1,000,000, and the estate tax rate goes from 35% to 55%. So the estate tax rate jumps by 20 full percentage points, from 35 to 55, so your favored uncle can take 55% of that IRA right off the bat due to estate taxes, but the balance that is left could also be subject to income taxes, which could be as high as 40%, plus whatever state taxes. So in California, the state tax rate is now 12.3%. So 40% income tax, 12.3% for the state of California. Other states have income taxes as well. Now, there's a special provision, and this has to do with how you set up your IRA beneficiaries. And basically, this has to deal with individuals that would like to continue or leave as much as they can to their heirs, assuming this case it's going to be your children. So the basic intent of having a retirement account obviously has been to save and finance your retirement, but many individuals, if they're fortunate enough, have other financial resources. They may have personal assets, they may have a pension, Social Security, and they would prefer to leave their tax-deferred IRAs to their beneficiaries. And one way to do this, tax-free, you can either convert it to a Roth IRA, which you could do this year, but you're going to end up paying whatever income tax bracket you're in. But let's suppose you don't want to pay that. You just want to transfer your IRA to your beneficiaries and allow that tax deferral to continue during your retirement, as well as continue on with your children. All of this has to do with how you set up your retirement plan and your retirement document. Some IRA provisions require the beneficiary to distribute the assets right after the owner's death. Some will allow the beneficiaries to take distributions over their life expectancy, which is a provision that's provided by the tax code. Now, here's the key thing. Depending on how you set this up, basically, you can defer the income taxes on your IRA, not the estate taxes. If there's estate taxes, those estate taxes are still going to have to be paid. So basically what you're doing, it's called an IRA stretch. And what you're doing is it allows your IRA to pass on from generation to generation. In doing so, the beneficiary has to follow certain rules to ensure that he or she doesn't owe the IRS excess accumulation penalties, which are caused by not taking distributions from your IRA. And what I mean by that, at age 70 and a half, you are required to take mandatory distributions. You still have to do that.
Could you give us a real-world example of how something like this might work?
Yeah, let's assume, we'll pick a name, a guy by the name of Tom. He has an IRA, and he has a son, we'll call his son Dick. Now, Tom dies this year when he's age 70, and his son Dick is age 40. Now, here's the key thing. Dick's life expectancy at age 40 is 42.7 years, which is determined at the time of his father's death. What this means is that Dick is able to stretch the distributions from his father's IRA over 42.7 years, which is Dick's life expectancy. So what would happen is the IRA would go from Dick's father to Dick, and Dick would have to immediately begin taking distributions from his IRA at a rate over 42.7 years. So let me give you an example. Let's just say that his father's IRA was, I don't know, let's just pick a simple figure of 100,000. If you divide 42.7 into 100,000, Dick would have to take out this year $2,342. And of course, that would go up next year because that 42.7 number gets smaller each year. So what would happen is Dick would begin to take immediate distributions. Even though he's age 40, he can take distributions and wouldn't have to pay an early retirement penalty, that 10% penalty if you take it out before age 59 and a half. And if Dick plays it smart and puts together a good investment portfolio that continues to grow, Dick would be able to do the same thing with his own children. So, John, essentially what you're trying to do here is stretch out the payment of the income distributions of the IRA over your beneficiary's life expectancy versus having all of that income, this $100,000, thrown into the tax return in the year of death.
Are there any kind of pitfalls when you're doing something like this, or just things in general people need to be aware of?
Yeah, I mean, it's very key that you have to have, if you're using a trust, there's a special kind of provision that you put in your trust that allows for this IRA stretch to take place. So that's number one. And the way you name the beneficiaries on your IRA. And then another thing, believe it or not, John, is the institution that you pick as custodian. Believe it or not, there are some brokerage firms and a lot of banks that, even though the IRS law allows you to do this, they do not allow that as part of their IRA disclosure form in the way that they manage IRAs. In other words, the institution says, well, I know the law says that and your estate plan says that, but we don't allow it. We're going to make you take the distribution over 5 years or take it all in a lump sum. So there's two parts to this. Well, there's three parts, actually. Your estate planning documents have to be in order that allow for this. Your beneficiary to your IRA has to be in shape that allows for this. And third, the institution who is the custodian to your IRA also has to allow this kind of distribution to take place. But John, here is just one way, at least, that you can minimize the income taxes that are due at death. And there's even ways to get around to solve part of the estate tax problem through what we call tax replacement trusts. But this is an unknown provision. A lot of people have IRAs, and it's amazing to see the shrinkage in IRAs. I had this a number of years ago. Very wealthy family, a large, very successful businessman, had a lot of money, literally millions of dollars in his IRA rollover, which was from his pension plan when he ran his business. And the heirs came in and were absolutely shocked when they got the estate tax bill, which there was no tax replacement trust in this case. The owner elected not to do that, but also the income taxes that were due at time of death, John. And that was back when we had the old Clinton tax rates, which were close to 40%. California's tax rates at that time were only 9.3%, but the income tax rates were 40%, 9.3% for California. The estate tax rate was over 50%. And in this particular case, the government took close to 80% of this individual's IRA. It was amazing that the estate attorney had not advised this particular individual about the income tax consequences of the way the title was held and his estate plan was set up in terms of his beneficiaries. So, key three things. Make sure your estate planning documents allow for this and are set up in this way. Beneficiary provisions on your IRA. And number three, the custodian on your IRA also allows it. Believe it or not, the custodian can negate your estate plan.
Several weeks ago, we did a story about one of your best friends calling it quits on California as a result of the new high tax rates. He's joining businesses that are doing that. And like our last story on dividends, where companies are taking evasive action, it seems like a lot of individuals are doing that. People are moving to states where they pay low taxes, or in the case of your friend, a state where he pays no income tax. So California just lost another revenue generator that it was counting on to achieve this balanced budget Governor Brown said we were going to have by next year in California. And he's not alone.
No, in fact, I got a call from a CPA the day after the elections referring me another IT firm. This is basically a small firm, a husband and wife team with a couple employees. They do web design and programming, a very successful business. We're going to call them Les and Donette, basically a husband and wife team with three employees. Although his wife is not on the payroll, even though she runs the office, a lot of that was done just to avoid paying additional Social Security taxes, which is what a lot of couples do. Believe it or not, John, remember back in the 80s, between a husband and wife, if the husband and wife worked in a business, they only assess Social Security taxes on the husband. They changed that, and so what a lot of businesses did is they just paid the husband and the wife didn't get paid in order to avoid paying the additional Social Security tax. But basically, husband and wife business, three employees. Most of their work, a lot of it is design work and programming websites, is done out of their office, although Les does a lot of time traveling to client locations around the country, so he spends a lot of his time out of the office. And like my friend Mark, he basically said, that's it, you know, I'm not going to be paying these kind of taxes. And like my friend Mark, since he spends a lot of his time, as a lot of IT people do, he spends a lot of his time outside the state, so it doesn't matter if he has an office in California, Nevada, or wherever he wants to go. And he's one of what we call the one percenters. They're fortunate enough. They make over several million dollars a year. And he basically came to me for a retirement plan, but he also wanted to talk about ideas on lowering their taxes. Obviously, given the fact that his taxes this year in California were going to be roughly about $263,000. And that's the one thing about California. When they passed the ballot measure raising tax rates, they made those tax rates retroactive to the beginning of the year. So, you know, a lot of these people are going to be going in, filing their tax return come next April of next year, and they're going to get quite a shock because they lowered the brackets on which they assess tax rates on. It used to be California raised tax rates in 2010 from 9.3 to 10.3. But in this latest ballot measure, they dropped that 10.3% down to 500,000. So you start paying 10.3 at 500,000, and then at 600,000, it jumps to 11.3, and then over a million, it jumps to 12.3. So basically, he had two goals. Number one, reduce taxes, and then also put them in a position where they could retire in 8 years. Les was age 58. His wife, Donette, was age 53. Basically, Les ran most of the marketing and the heavy programming for the business. Donette basically ran the office and a lot of Les's scheduling. Once again, he did a lot of traveling.
Okay, well, let's see if we can break this down a bit. Number one, how do you solve the tax issues? Well, obviously, physical relocation, like moving out of California, was one effort.
Well, I mean, that was the obvious one, and they had made the decision they were going to move out of California, although it's going to take them about 15 months to transition. So, John, they were looking at basically three states. Nevada and Texas were pretty obvious ones because there's no state income tax in Nevada, no state income tax in Texas. But they were also looking at Arizona because their largest client was located in Scottsdale. So rather than getting on an airplane flying over to Scottsdale all the time, well, if your largest client is in town, you just simply get in the car and drive to his office, or your client comes to your office. So Arizona was also one of the issues that they were looking at. The other thing, though, is a lot of Les's business clients were stationed across the country. So being located in a state that had a large airport or was a major hub was very important. That's one of the bad downfalls about San Diego's airport. It's not a hub airport. It only has one runway. In fact, it's considered one of the busiest airports in the country because with only one runway. But the problem flying out of San Diego is anywhere you're going across the country, you have to take connecting flights. And as anybody knows that does a lot of flying, the flight delays, the connections. And so locating in a state that has a good hub airport was also very important, which is one of the reasons he was looking at, let's say, Dallas. Phoenix has two runways, so that's a major hub center, as well as relocating to Vegas. He didn't really like Vegas in terms of living there, so they scratched Nevada off the list, and it really boiled down to Arizona and Dallas. But once again, even though they're going to make the transition, unfortunately, they're going to have to, number one, sell their home to cut their ties here in California. And they're also tied up with an office lease for 15 months. So their office lease is going to run out in 15 months. And obviously, they own a nice house here in Rancho Santa Fe. So they're going to have to put that house up for sale. So it's going to take them, John, probably another year and a half before they can make this transition.
Well, obviously, if they go to places like, they can go anywhere, Arizona, you can go to Texas, Nevada, and so after the move, they will have protected themselves. What about the interim period right now? Especially since we're starting to hear some rumbles on the part of the governor. He's picking up on the idea in California that people are leaving his state, and he can't understand why. But if they're going to have the bad taste to do that, he might as well tax them on an exit tax. You're just starting to hear some rumbles of this.
The day after the election, 20 major companies in California announced that they're moving out of this state, including Boeing. But here's where we have some good news. You know, if you take a look at Les and Donette's company, there are five employees, including Les and Donette, although Donette is not on the payroll. So basically, we've got four people on the payroll. Now, they've been using a 401k program. And the unfortunate thing with the 401k program, it only allows for $17,500 in contributions, although Les is 58, so there's an additional $5,000 that he can put. It's called a catch-up provision that he could put in a 401k program, but that's not going to cut it. So what I did is I basically sat down with him and I suggested that he meet with our pension consultants and set up something called the defined benefit pension plan. And the idea would be to fund for a $250,000 a year pension at age 66 when he plans on retiring. The second thing that I pointed out to him is he has another opportunity to contribute to a pension plan by putting his wife on payroll, because I suggested with taxes that he pay his wife a salary of $28,000. And of that $28,000, he could put $22,500 into a 401k program for his wife. So a good majority of that salary that he would pay his wife. In addition, if she worked 40 quarters, she would qualify for Social Security benefits herself. So basically, he did meet with our pension actuaries. And what we're going to do, John, is we're going to set up a defined benefit pension plan by the end of the year that's going to allow him to fund basically one-third of his income, which would be $630,000, into a defined benefit plan, $600,000, which will be for him and his wife, $30,000 for his employees. And here's the great news. Instead of paying California $263,000, which was his projected taxes under the new tax bill, his tax bill is going to drop to $157,000. So unfortunately for Governor Brown, he's going to end up paying the state of California $106,000 less in state income taxes this year than he did last year.
Right, and even in the short run, the state's going to get $100,000 less than it's anticipating. And when he moves, of course, then they get nothing. It's called killing off the goose that laid the golden egg. And this is being replicated. This is a historic way things tend to run. But what about federal taxes? They're paralleling what's going on in California.
Well, the defined benefit plan is also going to reduce his taxable income by a third. So in addition to the $106,000 that he's going to save in state taxes, we're also going to reduce his federal taxes by $230,000. So of the $630,000, John, that he's going to fund for his pension, the tax savings alone between federal and state are going to be $337,000. So basically 54% of his pension contribution is going to be paid for by funding it with money that he would normally pay towards taxes. And the idea would be is to fund this each year until age 66, which is the time that Les would want to retire, which would allow him to get full Social Security benefits. At that time, we're also talking about maybe setting up some kind of ESOP plan eventually where he'd sell the business to his employees, which would also get a tax deduction. So they already have close to $8 million in assets and investments, real estate, etc. And through the pension plan, what we're going to do is most of it's going to go into our dividend income program. And that's basically going to fund a monthly pension with his various assets, John. That's going to be between $50,000 and $60,000 a month when he retires 8 years from now.
Well, okay, so you're setting up a pension plan. That's going to help reduce some of his estate and other taxes. Anything in addition to that?
Yeah, I also told him because it looks more likely that they're going to move to Dallas just simply because it's a central hub and he can get to other clients around the country because Les spends a lot of time in airports flying to see clients. And one of the things I told him, I said, you know, Les, you got to be careful. Okay, we're taking care of California and federal. But when you move to Dallas, I know Dallas has higher property taxes, almost equivalent to what we have here in California, if not higher in certain areas. I said, be real careful. Because Boehner's talking about raising revenues by $800 billion, and that's the Romney plan of capping itemized deductions at $50,000. So whatever you do, be careful on the size home that you buy and also the mortgage that you carry because you're not going to be able to deduct all of your itemized deductions if they're capped at $50,000. So, you know, whatever you give to charity, whatever you make in a mortgage payment, you're not going to have to worry about state taxes if you move to Dallas. And that's one of the arguments that is shifting the move from, let's say, Arizona and Texas more over to Texas versus Arizona. Because if he moved to Arizona, we did some calculations, he'd owe roughly about $98,000 in state taxes to the state of Arizona versus zero taxes to the state of Texas. And if the federal government, let's say the Republicans, reach a deal with the president and cap itemized deductions at $50,000, his state taxes of $100,000 wouldn't be fully deductible, not to mention whatever mortgage expense and property taxes that he paid on anything that he bought in Arizona. So it looks like, John, they're leaning more towards Texas simply because of also planning for federal taxes going up and capping of itemized deductions, and also the fact that Dallas is a major international airport, so he can get to clients around the United States much easier. So it's looking more like Dallas or Texas is going to be the move. But here's one more individual leaving the state of California as a result of taxes, and through planning is going to end up paying the federal government and the state government actually less taxes this year, despite the fact that California just raised income taxes. If you are in your 50s or in your low 60s, self-employed, and don't have a lot of older employees or younger employees or few employees, this is just another method of planning for taxes that can go a long way to not only reducing your taxes, but set you up financially for your retirement. Look at it this way. You could pay it to the governor or Obama, or put it in a pension plan for yourself and provide for your own retirement. And I think that's a better way to go.
Maybe the most important thing we can emphasize for this whole thing, Jim, is that, let's take an example. If we look at Les and Donette, California raises a tax. This could be the federal government as well. They're forcing him to leave the state. I mean, that's a choice he's making. But by the right planning, it's important to note here that there are options, because the fatal thinking we've always said about the whole idea that I raise tax rates, I get more tax revenue, always assumes static world accounting, meaning that people don't begin to engage in maneuvers to try to legitimately avoid paying those taxes. So in his case, based on planning that you're doing, in this case, a defined benefit pension plan, he's actually going to pay $100,000 less in taxes while he's still inside California, and then next year, nothing. So the planned revenue that the state thought they were going to get, not only are they not getting it, it's going negative on them. But the most important thing is that people have options.
Absolutely. I mean, it's just incredible. In the first hour, Rob talked about the tremendous rally that we've seen in tax-free bonds since the election. I don't know why people waited this long, but you know what? There was a chance. People thought, well, maybe Romney would get in, and Romney said, I'm not going to raise taxes. So people were sort of sitting on the fence, John, but look what happened. The president won. Immediately, he's gone on his roadshow saying rich people need to pay a greater unfair share of the taxes, the way I'd call it. He's basically wanting the top 2% to pay, instead of 70% of the nation's taxes, 80% of the nation's taxes under his plan. So what are wealthy people doing? Well, we saw what the president of Costco did. He even went so far, he's going out in the bond market. They're borrowing $3 billion. And even though he railed at the Democratic convention for the rich to pay more taxes, look what he's doing with his own company. They're making a special distribution of 7% to themselves to get that money to tax at 15%. We're seeing people go into tax-free bonds in record numbers. I mean, it's just amazing to see what's occurring in the tax-free bond market. They're not going to sit there and keep it in taxable investments. They're going to say, okay, you're going to raise my taxes? Well, I'm going to take more of my income and make it non-taxable. Whether I'm going to do it with deductions, or unless in Donette's case, we're setting up a special pension plan where they're going to shelter their income from taxation, or it's people buying tax-free bonds. John, people take evasive action.
You know, last week you were talking about this whole phenomenon that when you lower the tax rates, they actually get more revenues. It's a reverse effect. For example, when President Bush pushed through Congress the lowering of tax rates on dividends, they actually got quadruple the yield. Astounding.
Yeah, I mean, the amount of dividends reported on tax returns went from $103 billion in 2002 before he cut the tax rate on dividends. And by the way, folks, dividends are taxed twice. But anyway, they went from $102 billion to over $400 billion this year. John, they'll probably top over $500 billion looking at all these special dividend increases that are being put into place in the month of December. Costco being a good example, Walmart accelerating their fourth quarter dividend payment from January of next year into December. So a lot of companies are taking evasive action. And this is what happens. When you lower taxes on somebody that is wealthy, what they do two things. It makes it attractive for them to invest their money to either expand their business, invest in the stock market. They want to make more money. And in the process, the economy grows. More people have jobs. Government revenues go up because there are more people working. The economy is growing at a faster rate. Middle class people make more money. It's just human nature. If you penalize this same person, they're going to take evasive action. They're not going to invest. We've been talking about how corporations are literally sitting on trillions of dollars of cash on the sidelines, not wanting to invest. And that will carry forward into next year, John, if they raise tax rates as the president wants to do. Companies are paying out a lot of that cash in the form of dividends, which will take place next month, as we talked about in early Christmas for dividend investors in the second hour. But people take evasive action. They do things to minimize their taxes. And the end result is the oldest lesson in tax policy: tax something, you get less of it.
So if we follow the trail of history and the president gets all of his way on taxes, we could assume that we're going to slide down into a recession and a lot more jobs are going away. That seems to be the lesson of history.
It's not only the lesson of history, it has been proven. I mean, you can see this taken directly from the government's financial statements, but also the actions, John. I mean, just take a look at what we've just talked about on this program this week. A record amount of debt financing by companies to pay out special dividends to shareholders in the month of December. People leaving state of California, like the case of Lesson Donette, which we just discussed, or my best friend Mark, who's basically leaving for Nevada. So that's what's going to happen. And we never learn that lesson, and we repeat the mistake over and over and over again. But the most important thing is, John, have yourself a plan, because if you don't have one, then you fall yourself subject to the whims of the marketplace or even the whims of government itself. And it's why you see people like Warren Buffett being worth as much as he has. He's made a lifetime career of minimizing his taxes, which is one reason he's as wealthy as he is. And don't kid yourself, folks. Whenever you hear these super rich people talk about paying lower taxes, they're talking about you paying the tax, not themselves. The president of Costco, who spoke at the Democratic convention about, you know, rich people paying more taxes, look what he just did with his company and his board of directors. All wealthy people, they just elected to pay themselves an early dividend to avoid paying the higher taxes. That's what rich people do.
You know, a couple of weeks ago after the election, I sort of thought that the fix was in. I thought that right after the elections happened, they began to talk about left and right. You know, we got to do this. And I thought the Republicans and Democrats already had something cooked up before we even got done with the election, because they realized they were going to have to deal with the fiscal cliff. Now I'm not so sure about that. It's become kabuki theater. But I've seen it before in politics as well, that first of all, it starts out, looks like something's going to happen. Then there's all this pathos in between, and suddenly there's a fix. So whether that happens remains to be seen.
Well, John, we've been here for, gosh, almost every year of Obama's presidency outside 2009. I mean, 2009, we got the president's stimulus program, we got QE1, so things were pretty ramped up for 2009. But John, 2010, we were at the fiscal cliff at the end of the year. We had a last-minute deal that was cut in the month of December. Fast forward to 2011, same thing at the last minute. And here we are a year later doing the same thing over and over again. And I suspect that at the last minute they're going to come up with some kind of patch to kick it down the road. And I suspect next year when they tackle the bigger issues, because I don't think it's unrealistic to expect that you can reform the tax code, handle all these deficit cutting issues, and do this a couple weeks before the Christmas holidays. So next year, I suspect there's going to be a lot of wrangling. The president will give a gazillion speeches, as he always does, a lot of photo ops, a lot of wrangling. And I suspect next year we'll be arguing about the very same thing this time next year. So not much has changed. That seems to be the modus operandi of this particular administration. So more kabuki theater to come in the years ahead. In the meantime, on behalf of John Loeffler and myself, we'd like to thank you for joining us here on the Financial Sense News Hour. Until you and I talk again, we hope you have a pleasant weekend.
You can subscribe to Financial Sense News Hour in the iTunes and BlackBerry podcast libraries or at feeds.feedburner.com/FSN. Find more information about our guests at www.financialsense.com/newshour. Friend us at www.facebook.com/financialsenseonline. For our on-the-go listeners, you can access Financial Sense on your mobile device at m.financialsense.com. The Financial Sense News Hour is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the News Hour each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of James Poplava and do not take into account listeners' suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Financial Sense News Hour and its parent company shall not be liable for any financial losses that result from investing in any companies profiled on or advertising with Financial Sense, or arising out of the use of any material on the News Hour. Be advised that you invest at your own risk.
This segment of the Financial Sense News Hour is brought to you by Nationwide Financial. For more information about Nationwide's products and services, please visit nationwide.com. That's nationwide.com. Neither Nationwide nor any of its affiliates is related to or affiliated with Jim Poplava of Poplava Securities, Incorporated.